From the studios of WXXI, this is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. In 2010, three musical friends joined forces to create the Neve Trio. One change in personnel, and 7 years later, the trio is going strong with steady bookings, a contract with a major label, and a residency at a well-regarded music school. The Neve Trio has come through Rochester a few times, even appearing on Live from Hochstein twice. Today, you'll hear them talk as well as play. Three's Company next on WXXI. Welcome to Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. We have the Neve Trio in our studios today. You have heard them play on our airwaves, both from their CDs and their performances on Live from Hochstein. Today, we get to meet them up close and personal. I'd like to introduce you to each of the members of the trio. Our violinist is Anna Williams. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Nice to have you here. Welcome as well to the pianist, Eri Nakamura.
Hello.
And our cellist is Mikhail Veselov.
Hi, pleasure being here.
It's really nice to have you all here. So how, Anna, did the Neve Trio come to be?
Oh, well, we came to be when Misha and I met at graduate school at the Longy School of Music, where we were studying. And we were sort of set up by our chamber music instructors. And at first we played in a quartet, and then we fell in love with the trio repertoire and realized that was really what we wanted to pursue. And at the same time, we had this very meaningful experience of going out into the community and playing for someone, his name was Bruce, at a assisted living facility. And it was a really poignant experience because we went and played for him. And each time we would play for him, he would tell us how much the music meant to him and how, you know, how music was such a big part of his life. And then he would share stories about himself before he had been in this assisted living facility. I failed to mention he was in an assisted living facility. And so every time we would go, we would have this sort of exchange. And he would tell us stories about his daughter, and her name was Neve. And so that's sort of where we got the inspiration to carry Bruce and his memory with us whenever we would play.
Misha, you had a personnel change in the trio. So without going into detail, this does strike me as something that could be tricky in a trio to replace somebody.
Sure. I think the most important thing was finding a right personality, and musical chemistry is so important. So we played with a bunch of pianists, and as soon as we played with Eri, Anna and I looked at each other and was like, this is the right person. So really we're looking for that kind of feeling, and Eri was there right away. So we're so glad to find Eri.
What specifically, Anna, were you looking for in a pianist, obviously, other than someone who could play?
Right. Well, I mean, Eri's ears must be burning, but she knows. I mean, she's an amazing musician, and also just that spirit of let's do this. It's, you know, it's not maybe the most clear-cut path when you're forming a chamber ensemble, and someone who's just as eager for all the things that, you know, we were going for as we were. And and you have to like each other. You have to have a lot of early morning flights and seeing each other before coffee sometimes. And so the chemistry was really important. And the musical ideas, of course, we want to have a shared kind of vocabulary, which we came to really quickly with Eri, which was just delightful.
Eri, how did you find out that these two were looking for a third?
Well, we met at the summer music festival called Arts Ahimsa in Lenox, Massachusetts, together, where we were teaching, all of us teaching individually. And we met there, and everything worked out after that, and musically worked out.
And here you are. What was it about Anna and Misha that you liked? What was it about their vision that you really sort of keyed in on?
Well, they were both very ambitious, and I'm an ambitious musically person, so that everything connected that way.
Well, we're going to hear that connection now for the first time in Backstage Pass. Our guests today are the Neve Trio. They have brought three different composers' works with them, and one of them we're going to hear cut up into two pieces. So we begin with Leonard Bernstein and the first movement of his piano trio, Opus 2. The Neve Trio join us live in Epstein Studio here on Backstage Pass.
Thank you.
The first movement of Leonard Bernstein's Piano Trio Opus 2. We will hear the second two movements of this piece on Backstage Pass with the Neve Trio right after we get to know violinist Anna Williams. Anna, so what were you like as a kid?
Oh, boy. Well, I was probably just as talkative as I am now, much to the chagrin of my parents. I like to do ballet, and I had a wish to play violin for a while. But at the time, my parents didn't want to overload, and so put it off for a while. But this talking thing, it became sort of an issue because I couldn't say all my sounds. I couldn't pronounce all my sounds, so I wouldn't say L's or K's. And my mom took me to a speech therapist. That didn't go over well. And she, being a special ed teacher herself, she immediately afterwards wanted to erase this memory. So as we were leaving the speech therapist for the first and only time, she turned to me and she said, didn't you want to take violin? And I said, yeah. So we walked over to the local music school and she said, I don't know anything about music lessons. I don't know anything about violin at all, but I need someone who has a nice attitude. And so I signed up for lessons and I studied with that teacher for 7 years. And my K's and my L's worked themselves out.
Yeah, apparently the K's and L's are not an issue anymore.
Right.
You actually ended up at the Walnut Hill School, which is really renowned for turning out fabulous musicians, a lot of soloists as well. Do you audition for that school?
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, in your, 14, 15-year-old life, it's like a really big, scary deal. But really, it's a wonderful community. We actually went back and did a masterclass there maybe a year ago. Maybe was it a year or two? But they just have such a wonderfully supportive community for all the arts. So it was a pleasure being a student there. It was wonderful.
The school is in Natick, Massachusetts, where I lived for a time.
Oh.
Where are you actually from?
I'm from Boston.
Well, there you go. Are you excited about the Red Sox this year?
I'm supposed to be, so yes.
Oh, good answer. Very good answer. So one of the people that you also worked with is very near and dear to the WXXI family, and that's Charlie Kesselman.
Charlie, he's the best, yeah.
Isn't he the best?
Yeah.
So what is this quartet program that he has that you took part in?
Oh, it's wonderful. I think if you look back over their sort of history, they have so many alumni who are active in the field, whether it's in orchestra or chamber music. Basically, you go for, I think it was 6 weeks at a time, and you learn like one or two quartets, but you really dig in and you rehearse every day, you know, several rehearsals a day, many hours every day. You get really excited about Bartok pizzas and bowings and how can we make that dynamic a little bit different than before. And it's just, it's the best for music nerds. It's like it was our paradise. It was the best. Yeah.
And you also have had works written for you, which must be a real trip.
Yeah, it's really exciting. And it always feels like a, you know, big responsibility because we're being trusted with like someone's baby.
Yeah.
You know, so we always want to, you know, do it justice. But we've been really lucky to work with some really fantastic composers, including coming up, we're going to be premiering work by Eric Nathan, who just had something done at the BSO. And we actually got to meet him or re-meet him. In Ari's case, she knew him from Yale, but we got to re-meet him when we worked at Brown last year. So just the world gets so small and so many people have wonderful things that they're willing to share with us, and we feel really fortunate to get to bring it to life.
And the thing is, too, Misha, that not only is it this responsibility to bring this baby into the world, but then your performance becomes the touchstone performance. Yours is the one to which every other performance is going to be compared. Is that nerve-wracking?
It is, but I think the great thing about music is that nothing is set in stone, and anybody allowed to have an opinion of their own. So, I mean, whether we perform a piece for the first time or we perform a piece that's been only performed once by someone else, it's kind of an open field. You can always add your own view of it and interpretation, and that's a great thing.
Ari, do you have the freedom to say to a composer, you know what? This passage isn't working well. A change needs to be made.
Absolutely. We usually do that. And when they appreciate it, too, when we say what we think.
Well, we're going to hear what you think now as we listen to the rest of Leonard Bernstein's piano trio. The Neve Trio join us today on Backstage Pass. And this is the second and third movements of Bernstein's piano trio, Opus 2, on Backstage Pass. That was the second and third movements of Leonard Bernstein's Piano Trio, Opus 2. The Neve Trio played on Classical 91.5. This is Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres. And Misha, it's your turn. Let's get to know you. Our cellist, Misha Veselov. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in St. Petersburg, Russia. My childhood, yes, pretty much. And very much like Anna, I went to community school, a music school, and I had the nicest and I think the best cello teacher I could possibly have, which was great and helped me to fall in love with the cello. I was really interested in it already, but teachers matter so much at that point, especially, always do, but especially at that point. And then I went to school in Moscow before I came here for grad school. So I grew up in St. Petersburg.
Why the cello?
I actually started playing piano first, and I love listening to piano, but it just didn't feel like it was my kind of instrument.
There you go, Ari, your job is safe.
Yeah, exactly. But cello just felt like my kind of instrument. The voice of the sound of the cello always spoke to me in a way. When I switched to the cello, I felt that was the right thing to do.
So you were in the music system, in the school system in Russia for many years,
right?
And then came here to the U.S. Did you find a very big difference in a music school in the U.S. versus what your training was like in Russia?
I wouldn't say so, to be honest. I think in a way, people who chose to do music in both countries, in Russia and U.S., are usually very serious about it and usually really love doing that. And that's, I will say, the similarities. There's some logistical differences, but that's about it. But I think...
So why did you choose grad school in the U.S. as opposed to grad school in Russia?
I came for a festival a few years in a row, and I got to play for a teacher whose name is Terry King. I really connected to him, and I felt he could really help me to get to the next level, so to speak. And I had a couple lessons with him, and my friend actually studied with him as well, and he loved it as well. So he let me know that they launched takes applications still, and I applied and came right away to study with Terry, and it was great. I did two programs at Longy, two grad programs, and I loved studying with Terry for 4 years. It was great.
You are also a soloist. You've played with orchestras as a soloist, plus, of course, you have this gig as well. And is there a huge difference to you, outside of the number of people with whom you're playing, is there a big difference for your playing between when you're doing work with the Neve Trio and versus when you're a soloist with a big orchestra?
Absolutely. I think it's rather lonely to be a soloist. And I hope for a long, long time is my priority and what I invest everything into. But I did play in orchestra a bunch, but it feels very nice. But there's something about the exchange that you have in a trio or in a quartet setting, where you get to kind of affect each other much more than when you're with the orchestra. You have this huge machine that doesn't get affected very much, and you just have to be on top of that. And with a trio or quartet, is a conversation. It's a very different type of playing, and I think it's much more satisfying to me personally.
This also goes back to finding a new pianist.
Right.
You can always pick up another violinist in an orchestra, but this becomes very, it's almost a fragile relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, it really matters. I think every time we perform, it's different. In the best case scenario, we're so in tune with each other that we respond and we get inspired by each other's playing all the time. So if you have someone who is not inspiring to you, that's different. So we're really lucky having each other and having the same values and way of thinking about music, I would say.
Your cello has a gorgeous sound to it.
Oh,
big, fat bottom on it. It's just nice. What is it?
It's actually funny. We always play this game with our audiences because our instruments are very different age. My cello was made in 2012 in the States, so it's a modern instrument. It looks, unfortunately, radio listeners can't see it, but it looks antique. It looks very old and beat up, but it's not my fault. It was done this way. And Anna's violin is from 1794, so it's a lot older. But they match the sound very nicely, I think.
1794? Wow, yeah. How did you find that?
Oh, there was a, I don't know, a lucky star shining down on me that day. I don't know. It was a blind test, and I was trying out different instruments, didn't know what anything was. I tried out a lot of modern instruments as well, and this was just the one that I became obsessed with, and I don't know. Thank my lucky stars I'm allowed to play on it.
You do a lot of traveling, and of course, one of the big stories I'm seeing is mostly from cellists. Yeah. This is becoming a kind of a thing, getting that cello on the plane. How's that going for you, Misha?
Well, I always get a drink on the flight, but it's very stressful. It's always a thing, and you have to always call ahead and make sure the plane model is going to be the right one. And we, between three of us, we try to get, accumulate miles and get the right status so you can get to board first and you get the overhead space, et cetera. So that's always a stress, but knock on wood, we haven't had any bad experiences so far.
And Ari, you don't need to worry about this.
That's the great thing about being a pianist, but it's like a lottery. Every time I get a different instrument, so it's like a challenge for me to make it work.
So how do you make that work?
Well, we just have to listen and appreciate what we get always and make music.
All right, so let's make some music as we listen to the Neve Trio performing an absolutely gorgeous piece from the repertoire for piano trio. This is the Andantino from Gabriel Fauré's Trio in D Minor. You are listening to Backstage Pass. Thank you. the second movement, the Andantino of Gabriel Fauré's Trio in D Minor. My, when I hear that, I understand exactly why you so love the form of the piano trio. The pianist is Eri Nakamura. Eri, you are really exciting and expressive and great fun to watch, I have to tell you.
Thank you.
You're awesome. You were born in Hiroshima.
Yes, I was, yes. And I grew up there until I was 15, and I came to Michigan for high school called Interlochen Arts Academy.
That's a long way for a 15-year-old to go.
That's true.
And what was that like? Did family come with you?
I was the only one because it's a boarding school. So there were students just like me leaving home and come to study in the States like that. And so, yeah.
It just strikes me at being 15 years old and flying halfway around the world to be on your own strikes me as a pretty independent kid.
I was very excited to come to the States, and I think it was harder for my parents to leave me, and they really did a great job just like, you know, letting me go and study.
And, you know, one of the changes in technology that's happened is these days their parents can actually hear their kids play in concerts over the web. That wasn't quite available for you when you were there. You were four when you started to play?
Yes, I was. I have two older brothers, and they all took piano lessons, but they didn't really like it. And then so there was a piano in my living room, and then I guess I just started to play or something, and my mother thought I really liked it. So she's like, why not? Maybe you should start piano. And then that's how, you know, it stuck with me.
So much for your brothers. Ha ha, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I get to now say something that in 10 years of Backstage Pass, I have never been able to say before. You got a scholarship from the Liberace Foundation.
Oh, wow. You have the information. Yes, that was I don't know how I got that, but when I was studying in San Francisco Conservatory of Music, the school applied for me, and I was told that I got the scholarship.
Were you asked to wear sequins? And
well, I wanted to, in my heart. Yes, I like the dazzle, jazzy.
I think maybe it is that expressiveness that they saw in you and said, this looks like someone who needs a candelabra and sequins.
I hope so, yes. I really appreciated that.
You've taken a lot of master classes with a lot of great people. So what are these master classes like, Eri?
Well, it's very different individually. Some could be very technical. Some can be for instance, Leon Fleischer. I played the Beethoven Fourth Concerto for him, and then he was talking about the universe. And that was very inspiring. So it depends on who the teacher is.
So what do you do when they talk about the universe? How do you translate a discussion of the universe into the keys in front of you on that piano?
Well, actually, the Fourth Concerto is very... it's about like the sublime, and so I did understand what he was talking about. It's about something else than just notes.
Has there been a master class that you walked out of and just said, I am so much better now?
I mean, it doesn't happen like that, but inspiration-wise, I really do have that kind of thing. Like I have epiphany or something like that. Something like that.
So who's inspirational to you, Eri?
Well, my most inspiration is Sergei Babayan, my teacher from Cleveland Institute of Music. I learned so much from him, and I get so much inspiration from him.
And this is a thread that I am getting from all three of you, is the inspiration that your teachers have given you. You all teach. So how do you, Anna, take that inspiration and pass it along to your students?
Well, I mean, I think that's the greatest gift that you can be given in this field is, or probably any field, is having a teacher that believes in you. I certainly had a wonderful teacher. I had many wonderful teachers. Irina Murasanu was a wonderful teacher. When I was little, Doobie Moshfegh was a wonderful teacher. And then in graduate school, Laura Bossert was a wonderful teacher. And they all, in common, they all had this sense of, here are tools that we think will help and to take you on your way and to help you to feel empowered. You know, and I think that if, you know, we're all teaching at the Launchy School of Music now in Boston, and you can see that in your students right away. You know, if you give them these tools to bring out their already wonderful gems of, or sort of, how do I put it, like they might have an aspect of their playing that's a diamond in the rough, but you can bring that out. You can help them to bring it out with certain tools and ways of thinking about things. So I guess to answer your question the long way, I think it's our greatest sort of honor and responsibility to try to pass that along.
Of course, Misha, when you're teaching at the Longy School, you're already teaching really great players.
Absolutely.
You already are at a high point for what it's going to walk in your door and sit down and start learning cello with you. So when you get one of these great players, then how are you shaping them? What do you see and what do you have to do with them?
Mm. Well, it's a hard question. Gosh, I think a big part of being a teacher also not getting on the way of what students have naturally in them. You can't impose your own feeling about the piece or interpretation. So I think what Anna, to kind of double down on what Anna said, is helping them to bring the most out of themselves. And even the best students, and I've been in that position myself, you know, having someone who points, that was really great, or work in that direction, it could be a huge help. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can help them with how great they are and just actually expand on that, I would say.
We have one last piece of music for our backstage pass, from The Beauty of Foray to The Snap of Piazzolla. Here is the Neve Trio on Backstage Pass as they perform Otoño Porteño. Thank you. Otonio Porteño, Astor Piazzolla, played by the Neve Trio on Backstage Pass. I'm Julia Figueres, and Anna, I'm telling you, you were all over that violin. You have to play parts of the violin that are usually not played.
I know.
Does it take a long time to get to do that, that swipe zip thing that's so cool that shows up in tangos?
I would say it takes less time and more nerve just to be like, it's okay, you can play where you're not supposed to play.
So just give us a quick demo, if you don't mind. You were playing really, really, like, off the bridge.
Yeah, so this is the cicerone. And I always warn audiences that it might make them feel itchy. It's supposed to. It's supposed to be the insects of Buenos Aires.
Ah.
Yeah.
And now the swipe thing. So how long does that take? Did you have to go to Buenos Aires to really get in the mood to get that?
Well, it's funny you should mention it. We actually have an album coming out of all Piazzolla music, and we had a really great opportunity to work with Leonardo Suarez Paz. And he is someone whose father was Piazzolla's original violinist.
Wow.
So it was pretty incredible to get to work with him, and he would sort of show us the little tricks and tips here and there of, you can dig in a little deeper, you can, you know, pluck a little harder, those kinds of things. It was really informative, and it made the whole process, like, completely alive.
And now you want to learn the tango on the dance floor.
Right.
So we started off with a story about you playing in assisted living. Ari, do you go out and do a lot of outreach playing?
Yes, I used to, and we still do as a trio. I remember when I was in undergrad, I remember doing community services, and I went to all kinds of the assisted living places that could look like a hotel, or, you know, it could be very humble. And I always enjoyed playing for them.
What does that give you when you're doing outreach, Misha?
I think it's just the biggest thing for us. It's a reminder of what music can mean for people, especially in the case with Bruce. He was in quite terrible situation physically. But when he heard music, he forgot about all his pains and issues, and he was the happiest person I've ever met in that way. And I think it was music for him.
How did you meet Bruce?
Well, we were introduced to this. Well, actually, I should back up. We were playing a lot of concerts for this special community in New Jersey, and he was someone that always come and loved, you know, music for a long time. So when he was no longer able to come to our concerts, that's when we started going to him in his by his bed, playing at his bedside.
What a great gift.
Well, we felt like we got quite the gift getting to meet him.
You have a lot of interesting collaborations that you've worked with. Ari, what's the collaboration that the Neve has done that you've liked best so far?
Well, always working with the composers, that's very exciting.
And you've worked with dance companies?
Yes.
Do you want to?
Yeah, we totally lucked out. When we were still in San Diego, we met and sort of were kindred spirits with this wonderful dance company in the area, Blythe Barton Dance, and we've been working with them ever since. It's such an illuminating experience when you come in with a phrase and you think it's sort of shaped a certain way, but then a dancer, they embody it maybe the exact opposite way, and it makes just as much sense just coming from a different perspective. So whether it's a dance company or a filmmaker, we're working with a filmmaker right now, actually on Piazzolla, you know, or even when we're recording albums, we record for the Shandos label. The Bernstein was from our American Moments album on the Shandos label. And even that's a collaboration of sorts, because you're working with a producer who has their own, you know, take on what they want it to sound like.
So, Misha, what keeps these collaborations from being just gimmicks?
I think it's a very fine line and easy to cross. But I think as long as both sides have music in mind, and that's the center of the collaboration, I think it will be a success, because you don't want to wow the audience. You want the audience to experience the music in the most meaningful way possible. And we had who had such a great collaborators that had the same idea about what it's for, and so we really lucked out. We never had that experience when it was just something put on top of music.
Well, I want to thank you all for bringing your music into us today for Backstage Pass. It's been a blast. So thank you again, the Neve Trio, our guests today. Our executive producer and director is Gene Fisher. Our audio technician is Andrew Croucher with help from Robert Braden. Our intern is James Heil. I'm your producer and host, Julia Figueres. Again, many thanks to the Neve Trio for joining us. Backstage Pass is a production of WXXI Public Broadcasting.